This episode of the Missed Spots podcast is brought to you by Amazon Prime, the amazing service from Amazon that allows you to get free two-day shipping on nearly every item available on their website, plus access to Amazon Prime Music and Prime Video service with tons of movies and TV shows, including the acclaimed original series Transparent, starring Jeffrey Tambor. Now you can get a free three-month trial of Amazon Prime by going to missbots.com/prime. Plus, if you do that, Amazon's going to throw in a free three-month trial of HBO on your Prime Video. Nothing else you have to say or do. You get that for free with this trial as well. That way you can catch up on Game of Thrones, Westworld, or you can watch anything from HBO's amazing back catalog, like The Sopranos, The Wire. It's all there for you. After your trial, you can pay just $99 for the entire year of Prime. Trust me, that sounds like a lot, but as a Prime member myself, that money more than pays for itself in just two-day shipping after just a couple of months. So head over to missspots.com/prime. right now and try Amazon Prime for free for 3 months and join what practically everyone should be a part of, Amazon Prime.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a free event.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
Welcome back to the Missed Spots podcast on MissedSpots.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me, as always, is the Leo Rush to my Bobby Lashley. Here's Kevin.
Yeah, I'm just like Leo Rush. I'm your hype man, just without all the big flips and everything.
But that also means that it makes me a computer-generated image and not a real person.
Which is true, and I'm glad that we're finally talking about this on the podcast, that, Mike, you are, in fact, not real.
So this is a CGI, what's the word I'm looking for?
This is more of a Her situation. If you ever saw the Joaquin Phoenix Scarlett Johansson vehicle, no. I've basically created you to fulfill my wishes and desires to have a wrestling podcast, so... I'm glad that we finally pulled the curtain back on that.
Oh, so I'm kind of like not real.
It's best if you don't dwell on it, Mike. We should probably just talk about, pay-per-views and get back to business as usual.
Oh, okay. So we're going to talk about Hell in a Cell, the pay-per-view that we just went through this past weekend. And not expecting a whole lot from the pay-per-view. We don't like the forced-in gimmick matches because the pay-per-view says as such. Overall, I think we got a pretty decent to good pay-per-view. There were some down spots in there, and we're going to talk about them in a little bit. But what was your feelings on the pay-per-view as a whole before we just jump into it?
I thought we had some really solid professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. I thought we had some great work from Joe and AJ. I thought the women's championship matches were both good for what they were. I thought that the tag matches were really solid. So yeah, I thought there was some really, really good work in there with a little bit of fluff and with a little bit of smoke and mirrors bullshit at the end.
Yeah. So on the pre-show, we had the SmackDown Tag Team Championship match with the New Day taking on Rusev Day, and New Day came out victorious. Aiden again kind of cost the team here by trying to be the star in the whole thing, not by standing up to bullies, but be a star, but actually take over the match and try to win it for the team, but because of
his hubris. The team ends up with the L, and New Day retains.
Yeah, and this was a good match up until that point, and it showed Aiden and Rusev were up to the task of going up against the New Day. We knew that this team was eventually going to dissolve, which what we saw on SmackDown a few days later. So this was exactly kind of what I expected, and I thought it was well. Everyone was represented well, and the New Day being the champions makes the most sense given the context of everything else going on in that division.
Yeah, and I'm fine with them going off and having an Aiden and Rusev storyline between the two of them. Good. It continues to give them something to do in a somewhat good storyline, like in the echelon of storylines for SmackDown Live. I wouldn't say it's the upper tier, but certainly a nice mid-card feud for these guys to have and remain relevant on the Blue brand.
For sure.
Now, we kicked off the main show with a Hell in a Cell match when we have two of them. That seems to be what they do. They sandwich the rest of the show between two Hell in a Cell matches. So we got Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy kicking off the show. And I thought this was a pretty good match up until the very end with a very weird finish to it. Where Jeff Hardy decided to just become full-on seven-year-old on a jungle gym.
I didn't care for this match maybe as much as you did. I didn't dislike it, but other than a few interesting spots, the inverted ladder spot with Jeff that I hadn't seen before, there really wasn't a lot to write home about here. I don't think this feud deserved a sell. And I also can't stand the idea of opening up a pay-per-view with the most brutal structure known to man. Why is this the most brutal thing in the world when we see several matches take place in it during a night? So there's very little they could have done to hook me in for this match. And overall, I thought it was rather pedestrian. And while the final spot with Jeff was brutal looking, you could not, at least I shouldn't say you, I could not watch him swinging on top of that cell and not think, "Wee!" It looked absolutely ridiculous. And the timing was off. It was just, it wasn't
good.
Yeah,
the timing was very off on that. Randy got off that table probably about 3.5 hours prior to Jeff actually falling off of it. But, you know, it's where we sometimes differ and what we enjoy. And I thought it was a fine match up until that. It was nothing to write home about. Like you said, that inverted ladder spot was actually pretty cool and unique. But I thought everything else that they did was solid. Wonky finish and a match and a feud that really didn't necessitate that Hell in the Cell gimmick. I mean, practically any other match on this card would have been better served in that cell than this one, because as you pointed out last week, this is their first match in their feud. And for it to be in such a highly gimmicked match is very strange.
Yeah.
Then we got the SmackDown Women's Championship match, which we were definitely looking forward to, and we got a delivery here. Becky Lynch defeats Charlotte to become the new women's champion. Really fine match between these two, as we know that they can put on. And did we both pick Charlotte for this?
You picked Charlotte. I picked Becky.
Oh,
that
okay.
That was the one difference we had in our picks for this pay-per-view.
And you know, as much as I am trailing you in predictions, I'll take a loss there to see Becky come out with the title. I was very happy to see that.
I think it was the better story, and my only nitpick on this match is the way it was done. It was basically a roll-up finish, which I would have liked to see a little more of a definitive. I think it might be an issue with Becky doesn't really have an impact finisher, does she?
She doesn't, no.
So you don't want to have Charlotte tap out there. First of all, let's get Becky an impact finisher. Yeah. And also, you don't always need that. You can have a brutal spot that leads to a pinfall there for her. But that's a minor nitpick. They did a great job in this match. Becky looked great. Her entire character as a heel is just so... there's so much polish already with her as a heel that she's been playing babyface now, it seems, forever. But it just seems like she was born for it. And she's a heel really in name only, though, because the crowd was ravenous for her to win that match.
Yeah, that's a thing that is continuing week after week. I mean, there was talks that they were going to really try to go with this tweener thing, or maybe pull a double turn of sorts to where Becky is the face, but is still with this attitude, and Charlotte goes full on heel. I will say, though, I think Becky could not only could use an impact finisher, needs new music with this new attitude. The music, I think, almost demands the crowd interaction with the that type of stuff, and it's a little too fast paced. I know that we said that about Sami Zayn at first in his heel shtick, but it kind of fit with him. After a few weeks of taking this Becky Lynch character in, I think she really does need different music.
I think that's a small thing and a pretty astute observation to make. Just speaking really quickly about the idea of doing a double turn there, I think it was a chance to do something special, a la Bret and Stone Cold Steve Austin, one of the greatest finishes you could ever see, or what, you know, one of these great matches in the history of professional wrestling. But it has to be done really, really well, and it has to be planned really well, and you have to know where you're going with it. And the WWE isn't into doing that kind of complexity in storytelling these days. So for what they were going to do, this was a hell of a result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. The Raw Tag Team Championship match was up next, and Dolph and Drew McIntyre successfully defended against Dean and Seth in a very good tag team match, as we knew that these four individuals could put on.
Oh yeah, this was a really good match, and it really worked up to an excellent finish, which I thought wasn't the most creative thing in the world, but just getting that clamp, I forget, it was Dean taking the pinfall, wasn't it?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah, and he took the claymore from Drew McIntyre. It was fast and furious at the end, and it really got the crowd into it. And it was just a really good match. I still think that having those two teams feud over the titles, having Seth with the IC belt around his waist and all that stuff, I still think overall was probably a mistake. But when you've got that kind of talent, you get a good match out of it.
Actually, he pinned Seth.
Oh, was it Seth?
Okay. Yeah. But pay-per-view after pay-per-view, the tag matches are always pretty damn good. We've talked about how the Raw tag team division is lacking kind of in quality teams, while SmackDown can kind of play plug and play with any of their teams and just have a good championship feud and always get good matches. But I mean, this was tag team wrestling at its finest, and this is what we enjoy seeing in tag team wrestling. The thing that WWE only seems to really want to give us on a monthly basis.
Well, it's also they only really want to give this to us when main event level talent are in the tag team division instead of classic tag teams. We're not going to see the revival.
On SmackDown, we get.
No, I'm talking about Raw.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm talking about Raw, and that's the way it's just been recently. You know, we either have a comedy team in the B team, or we have two well-known superstars holding the belts. So whether it be Matt and Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt, or you know the incarnations we have right now. I am hopeful to see the Dogs of War, as they are calling themselves, they're not going to stop this beef with the Shield. That's not going anywhere anytime soon. So I find it hard that they're going to move off this feud, but they really need to. We need to see some fresh blood in the tag team division on Raw going up against Dolph and Drew.
No, especially because we have a six-man tag coming up at Super Showdown. Yeah. Between all six of them. So that's definitely going on for a bit longer. And then we got this triple threat thing that we'll talk about a little later on. But moving on, is the AJ and Joe match from this show another one, like one of the matches that you wanted to see out of these two guys?
I thought this was the best AJ match we've seen in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
This lived up to the build-up. This lived up to the storyline. This was extremely well-wrestled, good in-ring psychology, brutality, good reversals. I mean, everything you could want in a professional wrestling match. And this was the match of the night for me. The finish, I'm hot and cold on the finish. I understand exactly why they did it. But I don't like having your cake and eating it too, necessarily. I don't like the fact that Joe is a winner, but AJ is the winner. That just gets a little bit old to me. But I understand why they did it in order to get to a third match. And I'm happy we're going to see a third match. I think the series is going really well. And I really do think Joe makes a lot of sense as a champion right now.
Yeah. So do you think with going back to the actually before we go back to the finish, yes, it was a really good match and it is one of the best AJ matches we've seen in a while. But going to the finish, do you think that they had the angle wrong on their execution or do you think they had it exactly where they wanted it to be because the tap out was hidden from the hard camera?
Yeah, but
because it kind of made for the audience going, well, what's Joe complaining about until they went to a replay? Because I almost feel like if you're gonna do that, let the audience see it so that they are already in the know.
But the audience wouldn't have seen it anyway. I mean, that happens so fast during a pinfall. There's no way that's going to happen. I think listen, they had a camera that was dead on Samoa Joe's side where AJ tapped. That was absolutely planned. I you know, these guys know what they're doing and it was perfectly timed. Yeah, I don't think if it would have been his left hand doing the tapping, it would have been any different. You still wouldn't have seen it immediately when it was happening.
Now, one thing that I do take out of this, and you seem to differ with me on it, is I almost think that this might be their kind of out on Joe. Like, AJ wins the next match clean, and this was just Joe's way of being able to say, hey, I beat him, but have your cake and eat it too. Reference, but I think now after this, they go with AJ winning the whole thing. I'm afraid of that.
I'm not necessarily calling that Joe is going to win the next match. What I'm saying is that I think it's time for him. I think the work that he's done has proven his merit, and the in-ring work is so solid. And, you know, we've seen AJ Styles is an incredible performer. He was the MVP. He was our Wrestler of the Year, everything last year. He's incredible, but there have been some lackluster matches with guys like Nakamura, and we've wondered, oh, has AJ lost a step? No, it's about the people that he's in there working with, you know, and I don't know if Nakamura was unmotivated or those guys just never got on the right page, but him and Joe have clicked from the moment they started feuding, and it's been one of the more enjoyable things to watch.
Yeah, it definitely has. Miz and Maurice, Daniel Bryan, Brie, the mixed tag team match was up next. We had very little actual work between Brie and Maurice the very early going of this match. Yes, thankfully. But when it all boiled down to the end of the match, it was all Brie and Maurice, and it was sloppy as hell, and it was like, see, that's like, I hate to be like this because it makes me look and sound like if someone could take this sound clip and just throw it all out of proportion. But see, that's why they shouldn't have been involved in this, is because they just were so, like, Maryse hasn't wrestled. And like, you could tell she wasn't in the ring wrestling at all during that match. She was tagging in and tagging out real quick, running around the ring, and she was in there for a really sloppy roll-up. She wasn't that great of a worker in her time anyway, and we know who Brie Bella is. So we had some good, solid work between Miz and Daniel Bryan prior to that, but then it just all fell apart in the last minute.
No, it just didn't matter. This they have taken a feud that I have been salivating for, and they've just turned it into something I don't care about. They had the setup. They had so many good components, and I was talking to my wife about this during the match last night, in the fact that really hating having the women involved in this, and I think speaking to your point, I feel like it makes me kind of sexist in that like, oh no, I don't want the women involved. And I think there's a good reason for that. One, in those mixed tags are never any good. Never. You can have the two best male superstars and the two best female, and a mixed tag match, in my opinion, always sucks. There's no drama when you have to tag somebody else in, but the person in the ring immediately is going out, so it's always the two fresh people. I don't think that they're well constructed. I think they're a poor idea for a match. And secondly, these are two very limited professional wrestlers in Brie Bella and Maryse. If this was Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch on the respective sides, that would have been a different thing. I still wouldn't have been for it because I think mixed tag matches suck, and I just want to see the two people fight each other. I don't necessarily need this family drama. It doesn't do anything for me. So I hope that doesn't come off as sexist. I have nothing but appreciation and love for women in professional wrestling, but this feud has been hurt by the inclusion of the significant others and not helped.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It took something that we were all looking forward to, Miz versus Daniel Bryan, many, many years in the making, and then I don't know. I don't know how to explain how much they disappointed by throwing in extra players into this.
After everything that's going on between these two guys, why does Daniel Bryan need more motivation to punch Miz in the face? Why does he need insulting his wife? I just don't understand why that's necessary.
It's not.
Yeah, and the match was nothing to write home about, and meh, it was one of the low points of the pay per view for me.
Yeah. Ronda and Alexa were up next for the Raw Women's Championship match. And this was a pretty good match here. It wasn't a squash like the title winning match for Ronda. Alexa got a lot of work in there and working on the ribs and such. But then we got, I'm sorry, I just got distracted by my Amazon going off in the background. And we got Ronda getting a definitive win over Alexa. I wasn't that impressed with her selling after the match, but she retains the title, and that was what we expected. But a good match nonetheless.
They put her in a position, unlike a few weeks ago in the tag match with Natalya, where they accentuated her strengths. And this is exactly what they have to do. I continue to be impressed by aspects of Ronda Rousey's game and then totally taken aback by her inexperience. It almost sometimes in the middle of the same move. And it's this was a good match. This match told a story, and I liked that story, and I thought that they did a good job with it. And for the people that I saw on Twitter going, I'm saying it right now, Ronda Rousey's better than Charlotte Flair.
Wait, people were saying that? Yeah, I didn't see that.
Listen, it's freaking Twitter. That's just what
happens. Yeah, I know, but holy shit.
That's just not the case. You can say Ronda's more exciting to you than Charlotte Flair because she's an exciting performer, but as far as being an in-ring talent, she has a long way to go. They've hid some of her weaknesses. They've also exposed some from time to time, and she continues to impress. And that's enough, because with her aura and the other parts of her game, it makes for a compelling character. And they need to keep working on that. But overall, bravo. Good job with that match.
Yeah. And then the main event. Roman and Braun. Hell in a Cell. This match felt like it went on for 2.5 hours. We had long periods of time where the match wasn't even happening because we had Dolph and Drew and Seth and Dean fighting on the top of the cage. We had Dolph and Seth wipe out through announce tables. And then Brock Lesnar showed up, kicked in the door, beat up Braun and Roman. Pretty much no contest. Strowman's cash-in is kaput. Mick Foley ate Mace. It is an overbooked mess that I actually fell asleep for during it for 2 minutes because of all of the stuff with the tag teams. And then when I heard Brock's music, I woke up.
That's actually called a survival instinct, because if you're somewhere and you hear Brock's music that you're not expecting, you got to be like, oh shit, Brock Lesnar's coming to kill me. So congratulations on that. You'll survive in the wild just fine, Mike. This match was garbage. This was a garbage match. That was an overbooked mess, as you said. Let me give a little breakdown here for you. If your selected champion, if the person that you have been wanting to lead this company for 5 years, if he's in the main event in a Hell in a Cell match with a person who was, up until you turned him heel, the hottest commodity in your company, and those two guys are in the main event of a pay-per-view in a Hell in a Cell, and you need to do that amount of smoke and mirrors bullshit so that you can, I don't know, distract from the nonsense and the poor booking and the apathy of the crowd, you've done something wrong. None of that mattered. The fact that we had people fighting on top of the cage that weren't involved in the match, who fucking cares? I don't care that Seth Rollins and Dolph Ziggler fell off the cage through the announce tables. I don't want to see that. It doesn't do anything for the storyline. They're both back up on Raw the next day. There's no repercussions. There's no need for it. There's no point to it. Who fucking cares? That was the entire... That could have been the title of the main event. It got somewhat interesting when Brock Lesnar shows up, because that's the last guy you expect to see. We thought he was coming back next year or something. And you're like, oh, this is intriguing. And then you find out, oh, it's because he's going to get paid $10 million to show up in Saudi Arabia and throw two suplexes and not take a pinfall. Boo. You know, it's just... This is the reason why Roman Reigns is never going to be the guy they want. Because instead of just having him go in there and beat Braun Strowman in an impressive match where they're the focus, with no one fighting on top of this freaking cage and no one taking a table bump, just a brutal, excellent wrestling match that makes people go, damn, that was awesome. No. Overbooked mess, a bunch of people that aren't involved in the match fighting on top of a cage. And by the way, Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns, two of the strongest booked people maybe in the history of the company, as far as their ability to shrug off pain. Hulk Hogan is probably the only one over them.
Yeah.
Undertaker, right? Kane, and when he came in. They were down on the mat for nearly 15 minutes. For what? What made that happen? We've seen each one of those people take table spots and 15 finishers and kick out and be up in seconds. But they're down on the mat for 15 minutes without moving? No. It was just poor. Poor execution, poor thought, poor everything.
You know, two other points I have here is Braun could have eaten a pinfall here and would have been just fine. I think.
Yes.
It's what should have happened. He is beyond the point to where he needs to be protected. He doesn't need to be protected. He can lose to your champion. And this was the champion's first title defense. Well, I'm sorry, his first pay-per-view title defense. He defended the title against Finn.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a no finish to his first pay-per-view title defense with your top title. That is silly.
And not just a no finish, a glorious no finish to set up a pointless...
Bobby Roode came out?
But to set up a
I know
really...
a lot of guys did. I might have just missed that one.
Yeah. But to set up a really dumb, predictable match in Saudi Arabia that I couldn't care less about. I mean, just bad, like I said, bad on every level. Yeah. Unfortunate for some great wrestling on this pay-per-view, but the big downs were the championship match and Miz and Daniel Bryan. I mean, who would have thought it?
Yeah, that is pretty interesting. So what do you give it as a grade, as a whole pay-per-view?
I hated that finish of that, and I hated that match. Not just the finish. I hated the match of the main event so much, I give this a C-.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I'm giving it a C+.
It just bummed me out.
Yeah. It did me too, buddy. It did me too. But I did like a lot of what we saw in between, and I feel like I'm saying the same thing, as I did for SummerSlam. Is it was such a good show up until the very end, and I'm trying not to make that impact my rating too much. This wasn't SummerSlam good, but it was a good card. So that's why I'm giving a C+.
Okay, I think we should move on.
Yeah, head on into Raw, buddy.
Well, what Raw picked up right where we left off from the pay-per-view the night before, setting up this triple threat title match in Saudi Arabia at Crown Jewels or Great Balls of Fire or whatever the fuck they want to call it. Not good. Love seeing Paul Heyman anytime he's on the screen, but other than that, there was just nothing here. I don't think there's any meat on this bone. I don't think there's anything to sink your teeth into here, because Brock Lesnar's not going to win this title. Roman Reigns isn't going to lose this title. It's basically a glorified house show that they're getting paid millions of dollars for, and that's what we're setting this up for. This white hot angle that they were trying to push now is 7 weeks away. We get to have the conclusion of it. And now we got to spin our wheels for another period of time with these guys and Roman and Braun that they weren't even confident enough to have a conclusion to a match. And now we're going to protract this out for another 7 weeks. Pass.
Hard pass.
Hard pass on that one for me.
Yeah.
The match that opened the show, or the first match in the show, was Dean and Drew, and this was a hell of a match.
Yeah, yeah.
I this was hard hitting. This was solid. I love that Drew McIntyre went over clean. That was what should happen. Drew McIntyre is an absolute beast, and when you see a guy like that kip up, you're like, Jesus, I mean, how does that guy move that way? And I have to say, Dean Ambrose, the snarky commentators like us on Twitter and Facebook and the internet have made fun of Dean Ambrose punches for so long. I think he actually went back and worked on that, because his punches look much more believable now. He's moving quicker in the ring. And some of the things that I always thought were kind of holes in Dean's game all of a sudden look like strengths to me. And I'm like, this guy's awesome.
Now, did you read that? I think it was this past week or the week prior that he actually, during his rehab, got MRSA.
Yeah, I did hear about that.
And like had a really tough time with that. So like maybe that is part of some of his slimming down. But then like he also... he bulked up in the upper body.
I mean,
he is looking in the best shape that I've ever seen him in. Yeah, his work rate looks great. And I have a serious question. Why do they continue to call Dean? And they also said, Michael Cole. He also said this about Drew. What makes them have unorthodox offense?
Well, referring to Drew McIntyre, it's because Cole's an idiot. But referring to Dean Ambrose, he has shown unorthodox. That little thing he would do where he'd run into the corner, the opposite corner, and push off the middle turnbuckle and run and clothesline another the guy in the opposite corner. That's pretty unorthodox, and I've always thought that was one of the dumbest moves I've ever seen. His rebound lariat. I mean, there's some things about Dean's...
Has he done the rebound lariat since coming back? I can't recall seeing it.
I haven't. I feel like Dean has... It was a couple years ago, Miz... You could notice a distinct time when Miz started to do everything a little bit faster. His movements became a little faster. The little backbreaker into a neckbreaker he did all of a sudden was just a split second quicker. And I feel like Dean, coming back from this injury, coming back from this situation, seems like he's in that mode as well. I've always thought that Dean was a hell of a worker and a great personality and a guy who I love to watch. But there was always that little bit where I was like, he moves a little bit slow from time to time, and he's not as crisp, and he looks dynamite right now.
Yeah, he really does.
Yeah.
I'm just sick of hearing them say unorthodox offense. So he does wrestling moves. Like what he does is wrestling. And there's nothing that makes him look that much more unorthodox, especially since coming back. Like, because he's not doing the wacky line and all of that. He looks more just serious about everything and not that wacky, zany Dean. So even like calling him like the lunatic fringe, maybe it fits because he's just a serious killer.
They're not going to ditch that because
I know they're not.
That's a brand for him.
Oh, absolutely. They have a trademark on that.
But hopefully it'll evolve. You know, that's what we can hope for with that. Chad Gable fought Victor from the Ascension. They basically squashed the Ascension two matches in a row, but the show must go on, so now we have a continuation of this. Gable goes over. There's some attacking after the bell, which means it's going to go on further. We've established that these two guys, Gable and Bobby Roode, are Oddfellow tag team. We get a couple quick victories over the Ascension. Let's find out what the next step of this thing is. And right now we're trudging a little bit through the mud, but I'll still give it a shot.
Yeah, you know, by this time, I was thinking because my whole thought behind this was Bobby Roode's going to get sick of Chad Gable, and then it's going to turn into a feud between the two of them. I haven't seen that yet. Like, Gable is being like very animated and very over the top, but Roode actually seems to be backing him up and enjoying it now.
It would be better if it didn't happen immediately. You know, them being together as a team for a month or so, if Bobby Roode turns on him, it will have more impact. If they're together for 2 weeks and he does it, I give them credit for not teasing that yet, because I feel like they always jump the gun on these things way too
quick. That's true. That is true.
A la Kevin Owens. But so that is obviously still in the works. The Undertaker is one of the greatest performers that's ever been. Respect and admiration from everybody in the business. And right now, he's in a feud with Triple H because Shawn Michaels didn't pick him to beat him. That's the main impetus of the of the hurt feelings from the Undertaker. How dare Shawn Michaels think that his best friend's going to beat me? Basically, the Undertaker's a petulant child who's upset that Shawn Michaels didn't pick him first in dodgeball. And in response to that, he comes out and cuts one of the dumbest rambling promos that you're going to hear. This was Bray Wyatt. This was the Bray Wyatt special. Go out and talk and talk and not say anything because there's nothing to talk about. And yeah, this was not good.
Yeah, I don't care. Like, okay. I hate that I am saying this about The Undertaker, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels, three of the greats of all time. Three people who I have a tremendous amount of respect for in this industry. They've done pretty much so much that they deserve infinite respect, but I don't care. There is no stakes to this. This is another one of WWE going back on their word on something when we were told end of an era number of years ago. They're going back on that and having it happen again, just like once in a lifetime that happened the very next year. When you do this enough to your audience and just lie to them, they're going to not care eventually. And you know what? You've made me not care about The Undertaker, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels involved in a storyline. Congratulations, WWE.
It's just poorly done, and we all know what it is. It's just fan service for a glorified house show in Australia.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know who it is, and I'm not going to call the person out anyway, but I did see on Twitter someone going, people keep on calling this a glorified house show, but... you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. Like, yeah, house shows are fun, but they usually don't have anything of substance going on with them. House shows can be a lot of fun because you usually get the wrestlers interacting with the crowd a bit more than they do on TV. And that does make it fun. But all of the results are typically babyfaces win because you got to send the crowd home happy.
And nothing of consequence actually happens. Yeah. And nothing of consequence will happen here. It won't matter. And it's a shame.
If Triple H wins, oh, big deal. He beat Undertaker outside of WrestleMania. If Undertaker wins, Undertaker won. Big deal. Yeah. Doesn't do anything.
Nothing. Another match that didn't matter at all was Bayley beating Dana Brooke.
Yep.
Okay. Another match that didn't really matter, AOP beating some guys.
Yep.
Okay. Drake Maverick is still coming out looking kind of like a douchebag.
Yep.
Seth Rollins fighting Dolph Ziggler again. This borderline to me on just overkill. We've seen these guys in the ring so much recently, and the fact that they took the table spot the night before after being involved in a really intense, long tag team match... sell something for a day, a week, something. You don't have to put these guys in every show. Let someone sell an injury for crying out loud. Seth wins. Hopefully it's the end of any shenanigans between these two, at least when the Intercontinental Championship is on the line.
Kevin Owens was off TV for a week after he lost to Braun Strowman at SummerSlam to sell that. Mm-hmm. These guys fell off of a cage, a very high cage, through tables, and they were back at work the next day. You could say, like, oh, that really shows it their character, but it doesn't need to be. I wouldn't get upset at all by Drew and Dolph and Seth not being on the show. And you know what? I'd like to think that Seth is just such a great worker that he sold by being slower in the ring the entire match. But I think that he was just full on hurting a bit from taking that bump. And if it was him selling, then he is a fantastic seller. If not, then that dude looked like he was hurting through a lot of that match.
If none of these big spots ever have any repercussions, then why should we care when they happen?
Yeah.
That's pretty simple to me. The law of diminishing returns. Ronda Rousey stumbled her way through yet another bad promo before we had all kinds of stuff with Natalya coming out to answer an open challenge and the Riot Squad beating her up. And then, thank God, the Bellas came down to chase off the villainous Riot Squad. We already had a match set up I never know. Is it set up for the Superstar Showdown or is it set
Super
up for
Showdown.
Evolution? I never know. I feel like we have now three with Great Balls of Jewels or whatever they call it coming up in Saudi Arabia. Now we have like three of these mini pay-per-view kind of things going on that I don't know what any matches are for, but. This wasn't a great segment. I would have much rather seen just a really good match with Ronda Rousey and Natalya than any of what I just saw.
Yeah. And it's kind of a slap in the face that, like, earlier on, Ronda was like, how do I go about doing open challenges? And Natty saying, oh, you just go out there and do it because that's what the dudes do. So here comes Ronda out to be the first woman to lay down an open challenge and it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It's like, well, fuck you.
Yeah. Should have just let that happen. Let the Riot Squad, if you really need to, have a beatdown afterwards.
Yeah.
But that's what I would have done there. But
let Ruby answer the challenge, and then after she loses, then have practically all that happen minus Natty.
Yeah. That could have worked real well. Leo Rush and Bobby Lashley being a manager and a client or whatever you want to have. I found Leo Rush extremely annoying.
Yeah, I did too.
Okay. I'm not sure if that's the thing that's going to get old Bob Lashley over, but it doesn't seem like it to me. The dude can certainly do some flips, and I know he's a talented in-ring worker, and he's definitely comfortable on a microphone. This may end up being in that not for me situation where I just don't find this entertaining or interesting. But I did find Elias saying, whose kid is this and what thoughtless parent let their child wander down the ramp? That was pretty funny.
Yeah. You know, I'm fine with Leo Rush being a mouthpiece for Lashley because we know that he needs it. And, you know, this is only Rush's second week on the big show.
In the first one, he's actually been live in the arena.
Yeah. So, like, but my issue a little bit is last week, Bobby Lashley didn't seem all that keen on him. And now they're definitively a business partnership, I guess you could say.
A lot happened off camera, Mike.
I guess so.
A lot happened off camera.
But yeah, his maybe there was a little bit of butterflies there, but yeah, his delivery seemed a little annoying, and yes. Yeah, I just then Lashley almost killed him twice in the ring afterwards, and not because he was attacking him. He was trying to celebrate with his new manager and nearly dropped him on his head a couple times.
Yeah, that was fun. We got a tag match with Nia Jax and Ember Moon versus Mickie James and Alicia Fox, who we, at some point in the last couple weeks, overthrew a small country in South America and installed herself as a dictator. It's a fabulous country that is very into garish fashions. So if anyone knows what that country is and they want to go ahead and send us a Facebook message, we'd be interested to know.
I'm going to say Suriname.
Okay. Nia Jax came back. Do you care?
No. Didn't seem like the crowd did either.
I actually thought she got a pretty good pop.
Mm.
I just... Listen, her music says she's not like most girls. I think she is like most girls. Because she is an aimless character that switches allegiances on a dime, that's one-dimensional and underbooked. that's most of the women on the roster. And that's why I find it very hard to get behind Nia Jax. She's been written poorly, and she also happens to be a pretty limited professional wrestler. Compared to everybody in that ring, oh no, that's not true. Alicia Fox is terrible. At least compared to Ember Moon and Mickie James, she's easily the third most least interesting person in that match. And Mickie James has been booked horribly. So that's my two cents on that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they only brought her back because she was nominated and then won this award for something a few days before that. So WWE was going to get all of the press that they could out of that. So might as well put her back on TV.
Yeah.
They certainly will have no direction for her after this. And love to be proved wrong, but that's what it looks like.
Yeah, and the main event, I'm sorry, just who cares? Baron Corbin versus Roman Reigns. All the run-ins in the world, who cares?
Yeah, that it's like, you know what? I don't think we overbooked Hell in a Cell enough. Let's make sure that we follow this up on Raw properly. Yeah, just throw guys out there and just let shit happen.
Yep.
Just night after night, I guess. But yeah, that was Raw. Going into SmackDown Live, Miz came out and had his wife be his guest on Miz TV, to which, you know, they cut down Bryan and Brie, and Maryse announced that she's going to be off SmackDown for a bit to go and be like mother of the year, just an all-around great mother and such. I was happy to hear that. Then Miz calls out Bryan because of the crowd booing Maryse and cheering for Bryan. Bryan comes out, we get some fisticuffs, and then we get a spot where Bryan drop kicks Miz into Maryse. Maryse sells pain, and then Miz is... I feel like we actually haven't seen a spot like this in a while, if I recall right. And everyone sells concern except for the paramedics. It seemed like they came down to the ring and were just like, all right, we're just going to stand here. You okay, lady? Of course it was a ruse. It was a trick. And this is a way for Miz to attack Bryan, but it backfires and Bryan's able to reverse it, and Miz actually hits Maryse for real. So I'm hoping that this is the last time we see Maryse in a while. We didn't see Brie during this, so that was a good thing. If this is a way just to write her out of this for a while, okay, sure, I'll take it. And then Brie can just do her thing over on Raw. Fine. But the thing that we really got out of this was that Bryan and Miz are going to face each other at Super Showdown with a title shot on the line. So they are having another match with stakes involved.
Everything I have to say about the match on the Hell in a Cell show applied to this segment. The fact that there's stakes involved in this match gets me back in, maybe, but they got a lot of work to do to make this meaningful again for me.
Yeah, if the trade-off is, hey, here's title shot match, bye-bye Brie and Maryse, I'll take that. As long as the rest of the booking along the way goes well, I'm going to give them enough rope to hang themselves with.
Sure.
We're now setting up. They're actually, I'll give them credit that they are doing setup for this Super Showdown. Whereas like in previous times with like the greatest Royal Rumble thing. They only did set up for like maybe two of the matches that they have going on for that. So we do have the Bar taking on the New Day for the titles at Super Showdown. So they are doing work between these two teams. Cesaro took on Kofi in a one-on-one match, and Cesaro won clean and in a pretty like rough, it looked bad, but like he looked like he kicked the hell out of Kofi there in a few spots. And that neutralizer at the end was pretty stiff looking.
Yeah, this was a solid match, and I was kind of surprised by the outcome. At the end of the day, this was a singles match with guys that are going into a tag match, and I'm usually lukewarm on those.
Mm-hmm. The Rusev Day saga continues. Aiden English, it does not feel good about what happened on Sunday, although does not believe that it was his fault, obviously leaning towards issues there. Rusev tells him he's not going to be involved in a match tonight, which is weird because it's a singles match, so he wouldn't be involved in the match. But after Aiden believes that they walk out, that Lana and Rusev walk out of the room, he mouths off to a stagehand about Rusev and Lana, only for Lana to be right behind him, having heard everything, and saying that she is going to tell Rusev about everything he said. So you would think that would be an easy thing for her to do, because she's probably going right after that to wherever Rusev is at. And their match with Nakamura and Rusev wasn't for another 10-ish minutes, because we had another backstage segment that went on and two commercial breaks before that match.
They don't communicate very well. That's the problem. That's why they're seeing couples counseling.
But they went to the Dollar General in between those, that too. I saw it. It was on a commercial. Rusev was having the time of his life in the Dollar General.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just glad that this, you know, obviously this led into the match, which was a solid match between Rusev and Nakamura, where Rusev obviously didn't pick up the title, even though at one point I thought he might.
That Machka kick was pretty devastating. I thought he might pick up the win there.
Yeah, and I was like, oh man, maybe they'll actually pull the trigger on this. That might be interesting. Obviously, we didn't get that, and we have Aiden English getting up on the ring apron, basically distracting Rusev and finally turning on him and beating him down after the match. I'm glad that, yes, was the setup a little ham-fisted as you described? Absolutely. But as you talked about in the pay-per-view in the open, if this means a feud between the two, if this means they have something to do, then I'm for it, not against it.
Yeah. It would have been interesting if they would have put the title into the mix on this feud. But, you know, though they keep it on Nakamura, and what they're going to do with him is
nothing.
Yeah. Your guess is as good as mine.
That's one of the reasons why I was thinking, oh, maybe Nakamura is doing so little and it wouldn't matter. It would probably really help the title to go on to Rusev. And that's why I was a little bit, I thought maybe it would be a possibility.
Yeah. It probably would have made more sense in hindsight. AJ Styles and Andrade Cien Almas had a match. Almas, week after week, is just going out there and showing everyone, you know, I'm going to be one of the best performers on this show, and you're going to have to deal with it. And he is doing it. I thought this was a great match between these guys for like a great SmackDown TV show match. AJ wins, but Almas looks great in the win, or in the loss.
AJ won with a kind of a cool finish, and Yeah, listen, you can't complain when you're in there with the world champion. You can't complain when you're being featured. But at what point does Almas do something of note and win a match? I mean, at one point, does he have a real feud to sink his teeth into and come out as the winner? If you want him to go out there and be a workhorse as a heel and go have great matches with everybody, I mean, that's wonderful. And I'm happy he's getting a paycheck and getting a chance to show his stuff off. But I kind of want to see him do something more than that.
Yeah, it's kind of like the whole Elias thing. Elias is a fine hand in the ring, but is so intriguing on the mic and as a character. It's the same thing. They keep putting him out there, and he's entertaining, but they're not really giving him a story to be a part of.
They're certainly not utilizing. I mean, listen, Almas being the guy who fights AJ after the pay-per-view is a fine place to be in. It's just not a place that he wants to be for very long.
Mm. Joe came out after the match and attacked AJ to continue on what they are having, because I think they're going to be a no disqualification match for the WWE Championship. You know, because after you have the ref miss a submission hold at the last pay-per-view, the next logical step is no disqualification.
Yeah, and obviously they did have a DQ finish in their first match, so maybe a little bit of sense being made there. But yeah, it's kind of silly to be like, oh, now we need no DQ. Well, no, maybe you need a second ref. There's other things you might need instead of that.
Yeah. Asuka and Naomi were out as the oddest and brightest tag team. Asuka taking on Billie Kay in singles action. Asuka wins. Yeah.
Not a fan of this pairing. I'm so tired of odd couple tag teams for no real reason. And at least they didn't have the joke this week was that Asuka can't speak English. So mild up, I guess, there.
Yeah. Then we closed out the show with Becky Lynch's title celebration. She calls out Charlotte, and they have a little back and forth before Becky gets mouthy with Charlotte and like, I want you to put the belt around my waist. I want you to call me queen. A little bit of joke, like saying that she's joking around, and then just straight up calls her a bitch. You know, when WWE breaks out the B word, them's fighting words.
Yeah.
And we got Charlotte attacking, but very quickly Becky takes advantage and lays the beat down on Charlotte and leaves her laying to close out the show. This Becky just continues to impress me. She love her so much.
She is just so freaking good, man. She oozes a confidence and a coolness that it makes you understand why everybody wants her to win this feud.
Yeah.
And while Becky is just calm and collected, delivering lines, Charlotte, the one thing that you have to say about Charlotte Flair is that she tends to be very stilted in her delivery. She almost always sounds, especially as a babyface, as she's reciting lines from memory, and she just doesn't have that natural flow to all of her promos. And when you put her in the ring next to Becky, who's effortlessly cool, and Charlotte, who is trying, seems like, to remember her lines, it's pretty bad. And
yeah,
that's another reason why people would rather see Becky Lynch here as the babyface. And I understand that. I'm a huge fan of Charlotte Flair. I love her in-ring work. I love her as a heel. I think there's a lot to be done with these two. There's a lot of stuff to delve into. And this was a good segment. This was a good segment for Becky Lynch, where she continues to show why she should be featured in the main event of SmackDown.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a little odd as the closing out segment of SmackDown. I honestly was a little caught off guard by it being over. And once the next show came on, I was like, oh, shit, that wasn't a commercial break. And I looked at the time. But yeah, I just love everything that Becky is doing right now. I mean, there could be, like you said, minor tweaks to the characters to make them be the best that they, I mean, actually, it'd be more like minor tweaks to Charlotte to make this feud completely click. But I'm not completely turned off by it.
Oh, no. And also, this promo from Charlotte was better than what she had done in previous weeks. There was definitely some animosity. I think overall this is done really, really well. I'm just pointing out, I understand the frustration with the fans when they look at this person versus this one and they're like, they're both great in the ring. Charlotte's been maybe over pushed. She has a little bit of that Roman Reigns vibe to her, to some fans. And we've got this effortlessly cool heel that seems so authentic and so comfortable that we're just sitting there going, yeah, more of this one. I get that.
Yeah. So that does it for TV for the week, coming out of the pay-per-view and heading into a glorified house show in a few weeks. Anything else you want to talk about wrestling from this week?
No, that was a long show. I think we can catch up on some other things, like that stupid show in Saudi Arabia and some other things next week.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to build towards three different shows coming up soon. So, yeah. All right, so that does it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for joining us once again. Make sure that you check out our social media in the meantime. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Miss Spots. We're always live tweeting along to Raw, SmackDown Live, and the pay-per-views. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. You can listen to this podcast in one of many different wonderful fashions, such as our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com, or simply MissSpots.com. You can also listen to us on practically any of the major streaming services for podcasts, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Podcast Addict, any of those. You can subscribe to the show and get brand new episodes every Thursday downloaded to the device of your choice. And you can also listen to us on Geek Life Radio every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central at geekliferadio.com. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll catch you guys next week. Good night. Good wrestling.